session number 10602, reel 15.
Was the Bombay camp larger or smaller than Barrackpore?
Oh, about the same size in width and breadth, if you like. Yes, just about the same.
What about the number of men there? Was that different?
Well, yes. Yes and no. Again, this is, you know, there was native regiments in the Bombay camp, and there was a coastal defence battery of the Royal Artillery. There was a military hospital within the Indian wing, and then there was another barrack block which had attached personnel. Now, separated from us by a road was, I think, two Indian regiments. So, you know, that was much larger than what we had at Barrackpore for military strength, if you like. The numbers was there. But again, you see, we had two companies away from Bombay. The two companies was at Doolally, which is over 300 miles away. And again, the native regiments at Bombay had companies at Doolally again, and there was a military hospital at Doolally. It wasn't as big as the one at Bombay, but there was another large military hospital. But there was Ordnance Corps and Service Corps at Doolally.
Were there any other British regiments apart from the DLI?
Not at Bombay or at Doolally, the two stations covered by that one unit. No, I don't think so.
What were the relationships like between the DLI and the Indian regiments?
Pretty fair.
Were you able to mix freely?
No, you never mixed. Never mixed at all. Except if you were on manoeuvres and one would be enemy to the other. You'd always be against each other, but you would never be with each other. At least not in my time there, no. No, it would never happened.
And to just talk about the camp for a little longer, were the eating facilities and so on the same as at Barrackpore?
Very much the same, because it was company messing again, still company messing. Yes, just about the same.
And the quality of the food, was that?
Almost the same. When we used to get attached personnel, came to us, and they used to have meals with us. They used to say we were a well-fed regiment. I don't know why, but the implication was we were a well-fed regiment. But you see, we used to pay extra messing. I think it was a penny or tuppence a day we used to pay extra out of our own pay for to get the extra food or an extra meal or something, you know, where it went. Oh, yes.
And what about your duties there? Were they the same?
Always the same, yes. There was only one... No, it's the same duties. There was no difference. Guard. Only there was only one guard at Bombay and one guard at Doolally, where there was numerous guards from Barrackpore. That was the difference. It was less exacting on duties.
Did you have to go out of camp as you had done at Barrackpore?
You could do, yes. You could go out any time almost while you had a pass.
I meant in terms of duty, for example.
No, there was no going out. The only duties there were when there was an emergency, when the civilian police couldn't hold, and if the civilian police asked for military help, then they would go out, yes.
Can you recall being involved in any incidents?
I wasn't involved in any of them, but there were some incidents while I was there with the unit.
Can you explain what happened?
Well, the Mohammedans and the Hindus were having a bit of a barney, and that had to be separated. The police couldn't do it, they weren't strong enough, and they asked for military help, and either one or two companies or the old force at Bombay from the regiment went out, including the band and bugles went out, and they stood at opposite sides, the troops on opposite side of the roads facing each other, fixed bayonets. Yeah, that was one incident that happened at Bombay, at least once. When I say at least once, I can actually recall once that happening. But then you say I wasn't at duty; I was then in the military hospital.
Was there any bloodshed as a result of the intervention of the British troops?
I can only recall one incident that was remarked about, which was not done deliberately by the British. An Hindu, and when I say an Hindu, he may have been a Mohammedan or an Hindu. To us, they were all Hindus. You know, there was Hindus, Mohammedans, Parsis. Then you had your Afghans and your people from the frontier, and they were always around. But it would be between the Hindus and the Mohammedans, and one of them just run and stuck his neck onto a bayonet. The lad had his bayonet on the, you know, he was standing at ease, and his rifle and bayonet, fixed bayonet, and the Hindu just run and stuck his neck on the bayonet of one of the lads that was there.
Was this during a period of civil disorder?
It was during that one of those periods.
Did that heighten tension between the population of Bombay and the troops, do you think?
I don't think so. I think the people knew that they were the like the police, they were there to be shot at. You know, this was religion. Mohammedans and Hindus. I wrote a letter to you, you didn't get that information. But the Connaught Rangers were stationed in the same barracks. And we were told, I cannot guarantee this, but we were told that two of the lads of the Connaught Rangers had gone out on a motorbike, and they'd gone into one part of Bombay, which was in Bounds. They were in Bounds, and they'd come into some kind of a procession, and both of them were murdered, and they were thrown onto the motorbike and set fire. And the Connaught Rangers went out to seek revenge, and after that the Connaught Rangers was disbanded. You could have bought, when I was there, you could have bought photos of incidents of either the Connaught Rangers or the Hindus lying out. I think the Connaught Rangers killed quite a few.
They actually went into town to get revenge?
They went into the town, into the area where their two mates had been murdered.
Did you receive, at that point, were British troops just not allowed out of the barracks into the town unless they were part of a military force?
Well, there was places. There was places you obviously you didn't go to, because almost every place you go abroad in India, at least at that time, there was areas which were out of bounds. But when you've mentioned that, I've just recalled now, when we left Bombay, Barrackpore, and went into Bombay, new areas which had been in bounds to the previous regiment were put out of bounds to our regiment, and our lads objected to it very much, and there was a few went out of bounds and were picked up by the garrison police, and the cases came that there was more cases of out of bounds in a short period of time than there had been known in the history of the regiment, and the district commander wanted to know what had happened, and the men quite openly stated it had been in bounds to other regiments, why wasn't it in bounds to the Durhams? And they couldn't give an adequate answer, and they just put the whole area back into bounds again.
Can you recall what sort of area this was that they'd made out of bounds?
The obvious area, the brothel area. They were the places, and they were the places that were inspected by the medical officers of the Royal Army Medical Corps, and they had been in bounds to the previous regiment.
You say the Royal Army Medical Corps inspected these areas. What form did that inspection take?
Well, the MOs went out to inspect the women to see that they were clean. They didn't have venereal disease.
Did that mean there were some brothels that
were... Oh, yes. Yes.
That were regarded as army brothels, and that's where...
More or less. They're more or less unlicensed, but were passed as being clean. But there was others... You, if you were caught anywhere near them, you would have been charged. Why?
Can you recall going to those areas yourself?
No, never went in. As I say, when I was, before I went as a nurse and orderly, the lads used to go out. They did it deliberate. You know, they said if that'd been in bounds to the other regiments, why wasn't it in bounds to us? And they thought at the time this was a repercussion coming back from the trouble they'd had in Calcutta over Private Butler. And they thought that it had been passed on by the headquarters in Calcutta to the headquarters in Bombay, and they put that area out of bounds, and the lads were determined that they were going to have it put back into bounds. Whether they wanted to go... The funny thing about it was, the lads who went out of bounds normally would never have gone out of bounds. And it was those lads, you know, that caused the problem. But anyhow, they got it put back into bounds. There was no trouble. I don't think the VD in our regiment was any worse or any better than any other regiment. I don't think it was any worse anyway.
Was there a high proportion of people who caught venereal disease?
Not a great lot. There was the odd one from time to time. It was always bound to happen. Always will happen.
Can I just ask you about any apart from being told what was out of bounds, were there any instructions about going out and not going out on your own, for example?
Not in Bombay, no. You could go out on your own or you could go out in company. But normally... a man going out would say to his mate, "Are you coming out?" And they would go out together. But I recall many, many times I used to go to chapel. I used to go to the Methodist chapel on Bombay, on the Calabar Causeway. I used to go almost every Sunday I wasn't on duty, and every Wednesday night I think there used to be a service, fellowship service used to be. Well, being a Wesleyan Methodist, I used to go to these when before I started work in the mines. I was made to go, and I used to go church parade on Sundays. There wasn't many; it was only about three of us in the battalion. But we used to go every Sunday, and two of us used to go almost every Sunday night and Wednesday nights if we weren't on duty. We were from two different companies. I'll tell you a story about the other lad. He was a good lad. He was killed. He won a DCM. The other lad.
This is much later on, right?
Yes, in North Africa. But we were close friends. We were as close as friends as anybody could be, because he was the older soldier. And when the battalion used to parade for church parade, there used to be the Church of England, the Roman Catholics, and then what they called the ODs, other denominations. Well, the other denominations, there was only about three or four of us, if that. And we had to march out of the barracks and go to the church, whether we went in or not, but we had to beat the church. And the senior soldier or the senior NCO would be with that marcher there, you know. But for us to get to church in time, we had to catch a bus, because our church was so far away from the barracks. We never missed it. We used to go walk back after the service. We would walk back because it would give us time to get back for dinner. But we would be marched out just as strict as the band and bugles and the Roman Catholics.
Was the Methodist chapel also a means of meeting people, other English people who lived in?
Yes, Bombay? We met one or two of the Europeans there, and we also met, if you like, the Eurasians, the half-castes, and one or two Indian Christians. And
did you make any friends with the civilian population?
No. We used to meet them and say, you know, at the church, and that was it, but never away from the church, never met anybody. You see, first, you're encouraged not to mix with the natives. Secondly, if you did get an attachment with a native and you wanted to get married, you have to get your CO's permission. Your CO would never give it. And you would have to be 26 years of age before you could. So, bearing in mind you had 7 years service, your service was, you know, you were still there when you were 26 or around 26, so if you were in India all that time. But your CO had to give permission. And I'm not saying there wasn't some liaisons with some British, but very rare. I can't recall it happening.
Did the the chapel organise any sort of events for people apart from the services? Were there any things that you could go to?
Just like a fellowship or a games night after you'd had the service on the Wednesday, they would supply tea and cakes or tea and biscuits, which is pretty normal even now, because if you go along to this chapel when they've got their fellowship meetings, there's tea and biscuits there. So, you know, it's not something that's unusual. It still goes on within the Methodist church or the Methodist religion. They're now united where they were separate before.
But were there no sort of close friendships built up as a result of?
No, I don't recall any. You would meet them on the Sunday and on the Wednesday, and you would have a bit crack with them while you were there, but once you left them, that was the end. Aye, it was not like home. When you're at home, you could, but you couldn't over there.
Do you think that they had a different attitude towards you because you?
Well, the Europeans over there were generally higher educated and had higher incomes, if you like, higher responsibilities. They were more equivalent to officer rank rather than our rank, the lower ranks, non-com ranks.
Did you find that the ones that you met at the chapel had nothing much to do with you?
They used to speak, but they were never nasty, you know. They would say hello and that, but you wouldn't get close to them. I never tried anyhow, you know. I went because of the service. I went because I was a Methodist. It's as simple as that. I went to follow my faith at the time. And even although it sounds strange, although I don't go to the churches now, I still think I follow the principles of Methodism.
Was religion very important to you at that period of your life, do you think?
Religion was very important until the Second World War started. So that's another story, I think, to come out. Yes, religion was fairly... At least the faith I had was very strong. As a matter of fact, the lads used to give me three nicknames, you know. Because I didn't smoke, drink or gamble or swear at the time, I was called Holy Joe, the Fighting Padre or the Sky Pilot. I used to get that often. Well, it was never said in a nasty way. You know, they used to say, oh, he's the Sky Pilot or he's the Fighting Padre. But, you know, I didn't take any harm, you know. They were all good lads. They had their way of life, I had mine. But, you know, I knew a lad from the Catholic faith, a lad called Mickey Walsh from Retka. And he used to say his prayers. He was in my squad anyway when we were at the depot. And he used to say his prayers every night, no matter where he was at. And when he used to come off sentry go, when he'd done his guard duty, at a certain time at night, he would say his prayers. And nobody would interfere with him. They would let him say his prayers. They never thought anything wrong about him, but he was persistent. What servicemen don't like is inconsistency. You know, they don't like you to say, well, I'll say my prayers tonight and I'll not say them for another time when it'll suit. But if you were consistent, they would observe that consistency and would watch over. I found that to be fairly straight, that was fairly straight.
You mentioned this, is it Mickey Walsh?
Aye.
Were there many other members of the battalion that you recall who were particularly religious, or was it comparatively few as a proportion of the men?
I think there was very few. I think they only went to church because they had to. But a lot of the Catholics went because it was their faith, you know, and... I don't recall many C of A's going, except maybe the officers. Certainly I can't recall NCOs going without was parade. But the other lad I was talking about, which I mentioned, who was the senior soldier to me, John Diston and I, we would go to church on Sundays and on Wednesdays if we weren't on duty. As I say, he was in another company. But sometime I might see him, you know, which you would do with, on the playing fields or the at the sea. You used to swim in the sea, or if you were, you know, the sports grounds and place like that. If I saw him, I would say, well, are you on duty tonight, or are you going to church, are you going down to the chapel tonight? And if he said yes, we would meet, we'd make arrangements to meet. But you see, when you were in different companies, your company came first, you know. Well, your section came first, then your platoon, then from your platoon to your company, then your battalion. That was the way the rule, that was the rule.
Can I move on perhaps to something related to out of camp life, and that's entertainment. Were you able to go into Bombay for, you mentioned the cinema, I think.
Oh yes, there was a cinema and there was shops, and you could go into restaurants, you know, there was restaurants you could go into which I'd never been able to do in Barakpur. There was none there. You see, you just had to depend on the charwala.
Were you able to get out of camp easily?
Oh yes. Once you had your pass, you just report the guardroom you were going out and report the guardroom when you came back in.
When did you have to be back in? Was that the same as at Barakpur?
About 12 o'clock at night.
So then, in fact, it was quite...
You had a permanent pass, and you just used to show your pass. If you're punished, you lost your pass for 3 months or 6 months, depending on the seriousness of the punishment. Oh, you could go out. Once you'd go to the guard room and report that you were going out. Well, you'd go out when you'd been to the guard room, but you would have to return to the guard room a minute to midnight. Now, there was two roll calls, one half an hour after Rivali and a one around 10 o'clock at night, between 9:30 and 10. Now, the list of the men out of barracks would be handed into the guard commander, and when the men came in, they would be checked off. This was for security reasons, that if a man didn't report in by midnight, he'd be classed as absent, and if he was missing at Rivali, a search would be made in the town to try and find him as to where he was. The garrison military police would be warned, and they would be looking for him. That's in case anything had happened to him other than his own absentee, reasons for being absent.
Were there many such incidents that you can recall?
Can't recall any, but that was the rule. That was the rule.
May I just ask you about getting periods of longer leave, 48 hours or a longer period still of leave. Was that possible, and did it take place?
It was possible, but I can't recall anyone taking it. It's same as when you were at Barakpur. But there was something, I think, if you were a long-serving soldier, say you'd served 6 years in India or over that, Far East, you could claim a holiday, a leave in England. But you would have to pay. I think you would have to pay for that. But you would receive your pay while you were on. They would find the your place on a troop ship to go, and they would find you your place on a troop ship to come back. But you'd have to pay all your own expenses when you got to England, or to whichever country, to Britain. I should say Britain rather than England, because we did have English, Irish and Scotch, Welsh troops there. I don't recall officers, yes, but other ranks, I cannot recall them ever going on holiday.
Did that cause any feeling of resentment? The officers could actually go on holiday and people...
I don't think so. I think the lads just accepted the fact they hadn't the money. They hadn't the money, so they just accepted it as being part of life.
Can I now turn to your duties when you were at Bombay? Did they change in any way from that of Barakpur?
Yes, in one sense. At Bombay, we went out to camp about 7 miles north of Bombay, where we could do field training in separate countryside altogether. We did train there. We did section training, platoon training, and company training. That was because the other company always had to be in Bombay. Now, when we went back to Bombay, the next company would come up.
What sort of field training would this be? Would this similar to the field training you've already described?
Yes, it's more or less the normal same, but it was like annual training. You know, you'd do your annual training. It was only to get the troops fit, I think, for the field if they were required.
Were you ever posted further away from Bombay then?
Oh yes, Doolally was the other detachment. There was two companies at Doolally, which is a hill station. It is quite in the Western Ghats. I think the distance would be over 300 miles away from Bombay. It was a bit bare country up there.
Roughly speaking, what period that were we talking about now? What year are we in?
I think this would be early 1935. But it could have been 1934, you know, but I think it would be early 1935.
And what duties did you have when you were on the hill station?
Well, very similar guard duties, you know, that was daily duty, 24 hours a day, that one. But we did our annual arms course. You did your fire and your weapons, your annual weapons course, because there was a Rangers up there, and the Indian regiments did theirs the same. There was an incident with the Indian regiment while we were up firing our course. They were a bit further along, their rifle butts were a bit further away from ours, and we were told quite bluntly that one of the Indian soldiers had died suddenly. And he was down in the lying position firing his course when he just gave a shout. And he rolled over, and when the NCO went to see what had happened, there was a very small snake, which is the deadliest snake in India, the crate, had bitten him. And he was dead before they could get first aid to him. And I think he was a Punjabi, one of the Punjabis. Now, I recall one day coming back from the rifles, I was in charge of a group of lads carrying the empty cases. You know, you had to, although when we fire our course, every round has to be accounted for. And the way they can be only accounted for is by the empty cases being counted. And every empty case had to be picked up and put in the box which the live ammunition had been taken to the range with. So when there were so many boxes and so many men had fired the course, they would be sent back. There would be three men would bring back two boxes of the empty cases, just as three men would carry the full cases there. And we were coming back, and I was in charge of the men coming back. The other two men were junior to me. And